Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know that our hosts sometimes send charts they're talking about directly to the Radio Plus app? If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Stephen Levinson with us from Stifel Nicolaus as we look at the news of a few days ago, which is Qantas pushing aside Boeing airplanes. Stephen, good morning.
Thanks. Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to have you on. Most of what I've heard is this is not the end of the world for Boeing, but you don't like to see plane cancellations, do you?
You certainly never like to see cancellations, but Boeing has an order backlog of more than 4,000 planes, and this is a small one. You have to expect there will be cancellations and deferrals, and what seems to have been lost in this whole thing is that Qantas actually pulled forward an option to buy 50 additional planes that was not yet included in backlog.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Now, the really ironic thing here is that the Qantas situation is sort of special. They have to fly longer routes and use more fuel than most other carriers do because of the geographic location of Australia. The 787 delay caused Qantas to have to fly the older, less fuel-efficient planes for a longer period during the interim, and it's high fuel prices that actually caused the losses that are that drove the decision to delay the purchase.
Well, if Boeing has a backlog of 4,000 orders, how long is it going to take it to work through that?
Probably, depending on the model, anywhere from 5.5 to 9 years. So, again, Boeing plans for cancellations. They're anticipated along with order deferrals. So we really don't think it's a big deal. And the other really interesting part of this is we think investors went and looked and said, well, who are Boeing's suppliers? This is bad for Boeing. It's bad for suppliers. And they banged down the stocks of a number of the suppliers who also supply materials to Airbus. So there's more than one airplane model.
Right. Give us an example of a supplier name.
4,200 planes in backlog. So there's a long, long way to go.
What's an example of a supplier?
Well, one of the examples is Triumph Group, TGI, which is a buy-rated stock here, along with Boeing. Hexcel, that provides
Oh, my word, there's a name for the past.
Precision Cast Parts, that makes a lot of jet engine parts. And three of the other materials companies, Kaiser Aluminum, Carpenter Technologies, and Allegheny Technologies, and all suffered as a result of the news the other day.
Look, I wanted to get back to this backlog.
Yes, that's right where I wanted to go. Thank you.
5.5 to 9 years, and everybody knows that. How much better could things get?
Well, I think the real thing is the thing that could get better is delivery rates. Right now, the supply chain is in a position to meet a number of increases at both Boeing and Airbus that go now through 2014. So, you know, nobody wants to make their customers wait that long for delivery of a product.
Steve, you mentioned earlier 4,000 planes. Help dummies like us. Where do you build them? I mean, is there a part of Washington State or other parts of Boeing where they have a factory the size of Rhode Island with 30 or 40 planes in it?
They're building planes, several models, up in the Seattle area, and that's their primary manufacturing site. And a little bit more than a year ago, they opened up a site in Charleston, South Carolina, that will build 787s to help them meet the demand for that plane.
I mean, when you talk to their management, or for that matter, to their labor, are they in a panic about building 4,000 planes, or is this just another day at the races for them?
I think it's another day at the races. Their upward breaks in production, in other words, increases, have gone smoothly. Most recently in the 787 program really seems on track to go from the current 3.5 planes a month to 5 a month by the end of the year and 10 a month by the end of next year. And it's all dependent upon very intricate relationships between Boeing and the constituents of its supply chain.
Steve, I want to squeeze this in here and we'll come back and talk about your area. You're as qualified as anyone to talk about what the space program did to our commercial aircraft. Obviously, seeing the film about Neil Armstrong this weekend, antiquated hardware technology from 40 and even 50 years ago, that's not true anymore. When you go into a cockpit of the new 787, do you say to yourself, a lot of this has come from our technology leadership in space?
Certainly a great deal of it has. A lot of advanced materials were developed to handle the heat and the pressures and the temperatures and the other forces that went in spaceships. And, of course, the computers that filled rooms that were required to do the Apollo missions are now compacted into what sits on your desktop.
Do you care if you fly an Airbus or a Boeing? Are you blind to that?
Well, as an American, certainly look to fly a Boeing plane, but really they're all good planes. They all have to meet standards set by the FAA and the foreign regulatory authorities to get airworthiness certificates. In other words, they're supposed to fly and stay up there.
Stephen, when you look at Boeing and our stereotypes of Boeing, what do we need to know in terms of buy, hold, sell? What's the part of Boeing we don't know about?
I think people don't realize that Boeing has become much more of a designer and assembler and has contracted out a lot of its work on the new plane. That way they are removing some of the risk from their own wallet, putting it into the hands of others. I think this first time with 787 was difficult. It didn't work just right, but the problems are ironed out and it'll probably work better in the future. The other thing is, of course, when people get on a plane, they think that it's Boeing and that Boeing makes all those parts. Again, it's not. They buy the engines from suppliers like General Electric, Rolls-Royce, and Pratt & Whitney. And there, again, is a very extensive supply chain that provides a lot of investment opportunities because the supply chain serves multiple suppliers, multiple models, and no one thing, for the most part, is really going to hurt them quite as badly.
If they're primarily Boeing, a designer and assembler, are they less vulnerable to union action now than they used to be?
No, they're always vulnerable to union action, a little bit less with the plant in South Carolina, which is not unionized. But what Boeing did a few years ago, and it was one of Jim Albaugh's objectives, which he met before he retired a few months ago, was to make a long-term deal with the unions. So there was a four-year deal, a year longer than prior contracts signed, a little bit more than a year ago. So Boeing's in pretty good shape on the labor front.
That Charleston plant became a big political issue. That got resolved?
It did get resolved.
Yeah.
I look at the GE website of GE Aviation. I was writing for EconoChat, Stephen, on Neil Armstrong flying a Ford Trimotor at age 6 in 1936. You talk about another time and place. There is the GE H80 turboprop engine. Some people look at our aircraft as essentially something strapped around two engines or four engines. Give us an update on American engine technology, whether it's GE or Pratt & Whitney. Link that in to the pride we all have in Boeing manufacturing.
Well, what's really going on in the engine arena is that advanced materials, including nickel superalloys and titanium alloys, have reduced the weight on the engines. They also allow them to burn at hotter temperatures, which means you can burn the fuel more efficiently, put less carbon into the air. And again, combined with the composite construction of some of these new designs, it really reduces the thrust requirement for new planes. So basically, what you're doing is enabling the airlines that operate these planes to make a profit. We published a note last month in July, right after the Farnborough Air Show over outside of London, and we did an analysis taking a look at what it would do to domestic air carriers if they upgraded their fleets to the new planes. And in some cases, they would double their margins from the cost savings by reduced fuel consumption and reduced maintenance, and that would really provide enough funding to allow them to acquire or lease the new planes.
I'm going to send this out, Ken, later today on Pinterest. This is fantastic, about the Slide Rule sisters and the women that helped develop all of it top secret, the jet engine technology, which then went on to the space program, this at General Electric under Gerhard Neumann.
You usually see them, you know, when they're in the plane you're getting on. But a few years ago, I went to the Pratt & Whitney plant in Connecticut.
Oh, did you? Oh, cool.
You have no idea how big a jet engine is until you stand next to one that's suspended by chains from a big beam at the factory.
Stephen Levinson, quickly, buy, hold, sell on Boeing right now.
We're buy right now. And on Friday, after that news came out, we were a buy on weakness along the suppliers that we follow that are buy rated, Hexcel, Triumph, Precision Cast Parts, Kaiser, Carpenter, and Allegheny.
Fascinating. Learned a lot. Stephen Levinson with Stifel Nicolaus.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.